Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to Football 52 as we record this on August 5th. The lights are officially up, Coach. I'm getting pictures. People are sending me pictures. People are driving by, taking pictures of the lights going up, and I saw a good portion of them look to be ready to go. Is it 100% a go? Are the lights ready?
I wouldn't be the one to answer that other than to confirm they're up and
secured.
You've got
to plug them in now. Yeah. You just got to plug them in.
And several months ago, John Kitzman and Darren Dunn had sent me an email, and there were a bunch of other people on it. I was just kind of one of the CCs, but it had the schedule of installation. And I remember being surprised at it at the time because it was like, you know, one day they come in, and within 2 days, all of the electrical components, trenching, and then a couple of weeks would go by, and then they're going to pour some footings, and then a couple of weeks go by, and they bring in the lights and put it up in 1 to 2 days. And I was like, this just doesn't sound right,
you know?
But that is exactly how it went. So we were literally out at practice 2 days ago. The whole team's out there, and all of a sudden somebody's like, hey, look, there's like a pole, a light post going up. And you could see it was just kind of like, you know, a crane. It wasn't the lighting company. It was like a subcontractor, and this pole is just kind of swinging and like doesn't look all that safe, you know. It's just kind of swinging up there into place, and then 5 or 10 minutes later, it was in place, and the crane's moving to the next spot, and then all of a sudden, really by the end of practice, I think out of the 7 light poles, 6 of them were up, and then about an hour later, they were all in.
Wow.
And it looks amazing.
Yeah, it does. From what I've seen, again, the pictures.
Yeah, I think as Darren Dunn told me from the start, you know, that if we're going to do this, we want to do this right. And that's why there was some delay between the time that I first started talking about it. Obviously, there's got to be dollars raised as well. But, you know, I think Darren did a really nice job of making sure that this was not, you know, kind of a half-ditch effort to just get lights. These are lights that, they're LED lights. They change color. They're going to light up the whole area, not just the field. It's going to be something that when we get playoff games and play meaningful games in late November, that Scripps Sports and ESPN are going to be excited about putting games on television because it'll have a big time feel.
Yeah, and again, you know, there was a part of my brain too when I started getting pictures like 2 weeks ago when they're trenching and digging and stuff, and I'm even thinking like, okay, it's late July. Hopefully everything is going to be ready. But apparently, once they get going, once they start rolling, it doesn't take them that long to get everything going.
Yeah, it really looked like to me like they were all the majority of the manufacturing is just done offsite somewhere,
yeah.
And then they bring them in, you know, fully capable and ready to go, and then just kind of stick them in the ground, for lack of a better term.
Coach, I got to say, and I brought this up before, but this seems like, and just from my perspective, the most hype I've felt around this football program, maybe since I've been up here. I mean, I go back to the, you know, even when the Bears announced they're going to Division I, I know the Ed McCaffrey thing was interesting, but it seems like there's more hype around this season than ever before. I mean, you obviously can't speak to all of that because we're going into what, year 4.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be feeling it. We're feeling it. It's crazy, and it's awesome in this area.
Well, I think people should. Like, our players are visible. They're in the community. We've been heavy on community service. We've been heavy on showing up to events in the community. Our team GPA is up from 2.4 to 3.4. These are local kids who have families and friends. And are known in, you know, at least if not in the football community, in their greater communities, in their church communities, et cetera. And so I think that's been the growth more than anything, right? Like it's obvious if you're paying attention. I've said it from the beginning. Like I have no magic playbook. I don't think that exists, right? Good players make good coaches. And so, and then I think that was like proven, you know, I didn't come in and call plays that just won us games regardless of our talent. We've slowly and steadily tried to build this with Colorado high school kids. And now they're going into that third and fourth year. And I think that they measure up, they look the part, they act the part. And if people are excited for the same reasons I am, those are my reasons.
Yeah, you can certainly feel it. And I want to take this opportunity, too, to kind of promote something we're going to be doing with you, Coach, here in a couple of weeks. Obviously, we're setting up shop that day for game night. And Brian and Tanner are pitching you some new slogan ideas, by the way, so you can feel free to write those down and be ready to pitch that to the crew.
But I feel like those guys kind of game plan.
Yeah.
And just say, let's see if we can get a reaction out of Lamb when he comes in here. Is it that? Because some of the stuff is like
they get
crazy off the wall.
So we're a unique bunch here, Coach. Yeah. You've kind of sensed that. And I think when company shows up, especially your kind of company, everybody gets excited and they just get giddy. And then it's like, hey, I've got an idea. What did Brian pitch to you? Nightingham. Yeah.
Nightingham Field.
Not the worst idea he's had.
Yeah. But I just felt like it was more about my reaction. Like everybody was watching to see what I thought about that. And I feel like there's a fear that when I walk out of here after the media shows in the morning, are you guys like, did you see him? Did you see his face? You
know, like, no, we're.
Am I being punked here?
Most of the time I'm mortified because I'm like, okay, what did Micah say to you? What did Brian say to you? What did Tanner do? And so that's usually the feeling I have anyway, is hopefully he'll be back next week for the next podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's
you keep showing up. So
it's fun for me, you know, and you know, if I've shown anything, like, I'm resilient. I'm tougher than a $2 steak when it comes to just, you know, scrutiny or whatever. I'm here, so I'll keep coming back.
Well, we're planning to do a show a week before that first football game where I set up shop. We're debating whether we're going to go indoors or outdoors. I'd like to be out at practice and set this up, but we want to kind of do a get to know the roster a little bit, maybe a few select guys, get some coaches on there, yourself on there. That's something I really look forward to because – you know, people want to know even more about a lot of these highlight players, these guys that are standing out that are going to lead us into this very important season. And many would say maybe this is the most important season other than the first season that it was announced UNC would be going Division I. It just feels like that.
I agree. There was opportunity when UNC went Division I, right? Like that's a story that I think resonates with a community, and especially a community like this, like kind of like we're going to bootstrap this, and we are good enough. We believe, right? And then you know, maybe that didn't quite come to fruition, but had UNC kind of taken off it with immediate success, we might have an environment here like they have at some of the FCS schools around the country, where there's 25,000 people at the games every week. I mean, there's enough of a population here to sustain that. And anyway, that opportunity was missed, but this is another one because there's an awareness. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more of a grassroots. It's not an administrative decision. It's a group of Colorado kids for the most part. We've got five. I think we're going to have, one of the best offensive lines in football. And they're all five Colorado kids that were recruited as high school kids. And I'm, you know, I haven't studied everyone's roster, but I don't think there's a Big Sky equivalent of that in any way. There are so many of the rosters, especially at the line of scrimmage, are being built with transfers now. And so it'll be really interesting to see if those, you know, five guys, but really it's a top seven or eight, can lead us in a way that I think they can.
Hey, and I would be totally okay with that day that we're out there for practice. We just call it the offensive line show. We just bring on all the offensive linemen because you've got me excited. And I know, you know, the O-line, they never get the credit and all this stuff, but you've got me more excited about an offensive line than I've ever been, you know, in the history of talking football. Coach, I was thinking about this, the Division I announcement. Now, I didn't know much about UNC when I came up here. I came up here in 2005, and that was, I believe that was the year that it was – the process had started, and I was interning, writing, whatever for the UNC Mirror, And I got the opportunity to go sit down with coach at the time, Kay Dalton. And I remember him saying, people think that it's just like turning on a light switch that, bam, you're Division One. And if they build it, if you build it, they will come. And it's just going to be this miraculous thing. I remember seeing the stress on his face saying, this is a process. And little did we know, it still has been a process. But it's just kind of interesting for me, even at 40 years old, to go all the way back to 2005 when I'm sitting down with a coach not knowing, you know, what this would mean going D1 to where we are here in 2026.
Yep. It's really clear for those of us that have really looked into it. The decision to move up levels is historically a bad decision in terms of wins and losses. Yeah. Not a bad decision for the university, not a bad decision for the eventual ability to become, you know, an established program at that level. But just if you look at time and time again, 9 out of 10 times a team moves up a classification, it becomes disaster for a while. Building a stadium, kind of the Field of Dreams thing, mm-hmm. that's the opposite. You know, if you look at the history of Montana State before they built their stadium versus after, at Montana before they built their stadium versus after, even James Madison, Indiana, some of the schools that are on people's radar right now at the higher level, that tends to be something that if you build it, they will come. And from recruits to fans to you know, the ability for a program to rise up. So that's kind of an interesting study over time to look at that. It's something I've paid close attention to because I've often been at the places where BYU is another place like that, where they built the stadium and then it became a power. And in a lot of those places, they worried about, well, would we fill it? We don't even have a full stadium now, but that was kind of that leap of faith that they took.
Yeah, no, it's just really interesting to kind of think about. I was thinking about that on the way in this morning, just my first time here at UNC and, you know, saying I want to cover sports, and then sitting down with Kay Dalton, some really interesting players, some solid players at that point. It was just a different world. And then to kind of fast forward to, hey, we're doing a weekly podcast here. Yeah. I was pretty nervous for those. And I don't get nervous as much with you anymore, Coach. But I'll tell you, sitting down with God rest his soul, with Kay Dalton at that point, that was a completely different planet for me. And I'm just really grateful now we get to sit down and you open up. You give us all this access, and it's fantastic.
Well, I enjoy it. And it's a, you know, part of my job to actually talk about what we're trying to do. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about the things I'm excited about. You know, you put the offensive line out there again. Like, I'm excited about the offensive line this year, but it's also, you know, it's an area that I'm expecting the same group of guys to improve significantly from a year ago. And so there are question marks there too. And I'm not afraid to talk about some of the things that we actually have to prove and can't just be talk.
Well, and on that offensive line, I want to bring this up too, seeing the Phil Steele preseason all-conference team. You have a couple of guys on that list, and a guy we've talked about a lot is Jack, and I think we got to set the record, sir. Is it Zebel or Zybel? Let's say it, because we've said it a few times here.
Yeah, it's Zebel.
Zebel. See? Neither. See, the third time is a charm on that
but
one.
But his nickname is Zebel,
right.
and that's
where I get confused. Yeah. That's where it messes with me.
Yeah.
But he is one of those guys that certainly we're excited to talk to and learn more from him. But he's kind of this dude, I think, that you're building this entire thing around, it seems like.
Yeah, that's true. And these honors are like they're well deserved, but it's really you could call it a most consecutive starts type of honor. That's really what they're going off of. They figure as a coach, if you're starting a guy for 40 plus games during his career in a row, this is somebody that you really prize. But I think what Jack means more to our team, and Levi for that matter, is that these guys, you know, had built a career and put film out where they could have entered the transfer portal. They could have been very marketable. And, you know, I just think of it like, whatever money that they could have got that was, you know, more than this place, that'll be doubled, tripled, quadrupled or more in their life by seeing something through a story like this. And for them to realize that and then kind of rally that whole group together and have so many returners at that position group. That's what I'm excited about. You know, whether how they're going to match up with opponents, like we've got Weber State coming in. They always have a great defensive front, you know, and I'm sure that they will this year. It'll be a tremendous challenge for us. So I'm anxious to see how we match up, right? But what I'm most excited about is when we can get a group of guys at a position or a team for that matter that we just know will fight the whole way through. That's what I really get excited about and geeked up on. It's kind of foolish to, as a coach, think that you can make predictions on how good your guys are going to be, but I know how hard they'll work.
Is it kind of rewarding, though, to see this Phil Steele, this preseason all-conference team, to see Jack on there? You mentioned Levi Johnson. Maddox is on there as a long snapper. Ezra Ekubon on there as well as a first-team defensive lineman, and then Hudson Vogeser, third-team linebacker. Yeah. What does that do for you? I mean, is it like, no, I don't pay attention to that, or is it kind of like, hey, taking notice of some of my guys?
Yeah, excited for those guys. But again, I think, you know, just overall, it's like it's not, they're not watching film. Phil Steele doesn't watch film of our guys. Like, no disrespect.
Yeah, where does he come up with this? I am curious.
Yeah, so you're basically going to say, like, you know, Montana State finished first in the conference last year. Looks like they'll be pretty good. Let's give them out of the 70 spots on the three all-conference teams preseason, let's give them 16 spots, you know, and then they get down to the Bears and it's like, let's give them. And then, so they look for our guys that have the most consecutive starts or were all conference at one level or another last year. So it really is. And I think our guys get that too. So in a way it's indicative of, you know, what you've done and how far you've come and what you've accomplished on the field. But in another way, it's just kind of the postseason award from last year regurgitated without the graduating seniors.
Yeah.
And so, you know, still much left to be accomplished. Congratulations to those guys. It was something, you know, it is something to be proud of, but it's more something to build on.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited at least to see a couple of names on there. It gives us something to talk about at least. And, you know, looking forward again, you've talked about this offensive line, what it's going to mean to you. And then defensively, we've talked a lot about the D-line. Ezra Ekubon is an interesting story too, because I'm a Broncos fan and I know his dad played for the Denver Broncos and we've had him on the show a couple of times. But that's another guy. Seems like he's been with the Bears for a few years now. It flies by, but another guy I'm really looking forward to see what he does this upcoming season.
Yeah, interesting. I've talked to you about, you know, in the year that I got here, I didn't really pay attention to it, but the outgoing transfer portal guys, UNC was number one in the league, had over 40 guys that had entered the transfer portal with the changeover from Coach McCaffrey to me. So from a retention standpoint, it's been a real challenge. We have three guys this year. Ezra's one of them. It's Ezra Ekubon, Alfred Schmidt, and Frankie Morales. Mm. Those three guys are the only guys that are here.
Wow.
From their class.
Wow.
So they are kind of like fifth year senior guys. And a program should have just much, much more than that. That's why as excited as I am about this year, next year will be even more so, because every year we're retaining players at a greater rate. Guys are happy here. Not that they would not aspire to go into the transfer portal and get something that they would think is amazing, right? Like, I'm not immune to that. I'm not setting up a program where guys aren't looking at the realities of college football. But I think we have a program where guys realize that they will be supported, they will be encouraged, they can grow, and they can achieve a lot here, and they want to be fairly picky about whether they leave. And so I think that we will have, relative to our peers, excellent retention, excellent player development, and continue to get better and better. And I think that next year will be a larger step in that direction, because we don't have a lot of seniors, and we especially don't have a lot of fifth-year seniors, only three of those guys.
Well, you said a couple of things that are ringing my bell. Retention, fifth-year seniors, fifth-year, five-for-five kind of deal. Boy, that's not a big story or anything that involves a certain UNC basketball player, Brock Wisney.
What do we call those? Get back to Brock in a second, but what do we call guys now?
I don't know.
There are only five kind of like nomenclatures. You know, you have a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. What do we call a guy now who's played for 3 years?
Got to create a new thing.
Is that a junior with 2 years left? Yeah, we need another year.
Yeah, you need another thing now. I tell you, I stopped trying to to fool myself that I knew what any where any of these guys were after COVID. I just stopped. I'm like, do you play? Are you a person that is actually enrolled at the school playing football? Because I lost it. Now with this, it's just confused everything. And I think the NCAA even confused this by, I mean, what to me, and I'm on the outside looking in, just simply go, you know, it's 2026. Just go back to 2022 and say from that point on, going forward, if you played four full years and you would be eligible for this.
Right.
To me, it seems really simple to just go back to 2022, draw the line there, but they didn't.
Yeah,
and that's where the lawsuit began.
Yeah, it's so interesting that with the NCAA, like the NCAA, like straight up has their sights set on Greeley, Colorado, right now.
Huge.
It's nuts because it was just a couple years ago that Vanderbilt, you know, got a player eligible through the court system. And it was like, and Diego Pavia just, he went and played, you know, like he did his deal in football and like, and some other guys, you know, used that precedent and gained eligibility. And it was, there was just nothing from the NCAA. But right now I'm getting multiple notices from the NCAA each week where they're making emphases on rules. They're in some cases creating their own like new interpretation of an existing rule, or not new interpretation, but new emphasis on an existing rule, making sure that we as membership entities, the schools themselves in the NCAA, that we don't act on this judicial decision that was made in Colorado. It's like, it's not normal. It is completely unique for my 25, 30 years in NCAA athletics.
Coach, I did a weekly show with Brock Wisney this year. The nicest guy in the world.
100%,
The guy you would think of, if I could take all of the college football players on the planet, and I would say there's a pretty good chance that guy's not going to be involved in a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I would point him out specifically and say, yeah, that guy's probably doesn't want the drama. He just puts his head down and goes to work.
Right.
And yet here he is.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, and super and I'm not terribly close with Brock, right? Like I see him in the weight room, say hi, cheer for him, you know, when I'm go to basketball games and stuff. But you know, by all accounts and in my interactions with him, super composed, like not really excitable in a way that's going to get him off track. And it's interesting because he's already signed.
Yeah. He's already signed
to play
Spain.
European. Yeah, yeah. To play European professional basketball. And like, so this is like not a thing. And yet the NCAA is like specifically saying if somebody has signed, it's almost like they're like one word away from saying if there's somebody from Colorado who has signed a professional contract in Spain, that player cannot come
100%.
Back. 100%. It's crazy, like, targeted.
We've got, and I was reading the new, the Protect College, Protect College Sports Act? Is that what it, and I know the SEC and the Big Ten, they're kind of crossing over and they've got like, I don't know if it's officially in the, you would tell me, but there's a Lane Kiffin rule now.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if now it's going to be the Brock Wisney rule, although in 5 years it won't really matter because the 5 for 5, all those players, all that stuff will go away. But it is crazy how this thing has taken off. I took the week off a couple weeks ago when this all went down, and I had a bunch of people messaging me saying, what do you know about this? Yeah. Is Brock... I'm like, Brock's not texting me. I haven't heard a word about it. So I shoot Brock a text. I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? Can you come on and talk about it? And he's like, I can't talk about it. I can come on and talk about whatever, but I can't talk about that.
Ongoing, I guess. Yeah.
So he gives me his lawyer's number, and we had the lawyer on, and she was great. She texts me Friday and says, we won. I said, oh, is this public? Can I put this out there? And she's like, heck yeah, it's all over the place. So I'm thinking, great. So I text Brock, like, congratulations, this is really cool. And he's again like, I don't want congratulations. Right. Yeah. I don't even know how I feel about that. I said, so what are you going to do? Because I got to be the journalist guy once in a while, you know, pretend to be. And he's like, honestly, I don't know yet. Because there was a thought that he could enter this makeshift transfer portal and go and play in college, play again. Coach Smiley even said on his podcast, said, yeah, he's not going to stay at UNC. He's going to have a demand out there. Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, cool. Well, let me know when you know.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then the next day, all hell breaks loose. And it's like, wait a second. No, we're fighting this. Why is the NCAA fighting this one more so than I've seen them fight a lot of the cases that have come up.
Yeah, just, I mean, for me, it's got to be conjecture, right? Like, you know, in terms of Brock's motivations and, you know, all that. Obviously, Smiley is a way better person to talk to for that. But, you know, my guess is that there's nothing personal at UNC or at Brock or anything like that. It's just the NCAA is tired of being pushed around by the courts.
Mm-hmm.
The courts seem more and more willing to push the NCAA around. And so now there's a new battle and a new front. And so I think the NCAA is just simply becoming more aggressive. And this happens to be, you know, maybe they feel like it's the straw that would break the camel's back. I mean, in a football sense, because we have a couple of guys.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
If this happens, our team may change by one or two roster spots, you know, because we have some guys out there floating around that, you know, would potentially have that year and make us a better football team. But the timing of this is absurd. We're in the middle of training camp. I mean, we went decades in the NCAA with like one rule change, you know, like, hey, you know, from now on the on a kickoff, the touchback will be moved from the 20 to the 25 yard line. We feel like that will encourage more touchbacks by the return team and therefore a better safety for the players. And then that was like, you know, discussed forever. And you know, now it's just like almost daily. There is some kind of new interpretation rule. The Division I manual is so outdated. We used to have to take, as Division I coaches, we used to have to take a recruiting certification test every year. And that manual began to be so obsolete within weeks in the past few years that we no longer have to do that.
Hmm.
It was an open book. You know, it was a tough test. People failed it, and then you couldn't go on the road recruiting. It was a difficult test, even as open book, because a lot of the questions were kind of trick questions, and they'd be hidden somewhere in the book, and you had to know how to apply the question to, you know, where you would find the answers in the book. Now, there's nothing like that, and I think it's because the NCAA recognizes there's no way we could have a legitimate test because the rules change so quickly. We just have to trust that everybody is staying aware of the new rules and operating as such.
Well, I don't know how you do that either.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you, this stuff's really fascinating to me, but now, like, August 5th, 2020, I'm confused by all of it because it's so – this whole thing is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Completely. We actually got some guidance that, you know, one of these players that we were thinking about adding to the roster that we could on a practice basis, but that competition eligibility would be determined at a later time. And so I was thinking, okay, well, I don't really want our roster and depth chart to be potentially on a yo-yo like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we bring in a new player, a good player that would compete for playing time or else we wouldn't do it. And now the current player on the team, which we're already excited about and also has to compete, now they have new competition. And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 weeks from now, we find out that the new player would not be eligible. What a letdown for the new player. And then the dynamic for the player that's been here and was planning on competing and playing on game days.
And you said you have a couple of players that kind of fit this description of players that are kind of on that yo-yo mode right now.
We have two earmarked right now.
So what do you do?
Right now, nothing, because I, you know, like I said, the gray area of, go ahead and, you know, I think there'll be practice eligible and competition eligibility to be determined. And then in another player's case, it's kind of like we have to figure out how contactable they are because there's some gray area on whether the portal for their situation would be a mandatory requirement for us to actually have a recruiting conversation.
Hmm.
And so we have these two guys in fairly different situations from each other. And in both cases, it's like there is some type of roadblock because there's uncertainty. And the NCAA, as much as they're trying right now to provide certainty, it's really just making it – had they just followed the injunction – and I'm not saying they should have, right? Like I don't know all of the unintended consequences of allowing the 2022 class to have a fifth year. Like I don't know that. I'm not pretending that I do. What I am saying is it's not just unusual. It's unique the way the NCAA is reacting to this Whitney
case. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like you said, I think to start this topic, like the NCAA is targeting Greeley, Colorado because of Brock Whitney specifically in this case.
Sights set. Yeah, not. I don't know if they're targeting, right? But like they are looking at Greeley. Like they're actually having conversations at the highest level of the NCAA
yeah.
with the with the name Wisney in there, as they referred to this case.
It's wild.
Yeah, and then obviously, like, just like you, first inclination was, you know, when I kind of saw, like, oh, we're going to get Wisney. You know, I'm excited for, as a basketball fan of UNC and a friend of all the boys and the coaches over there, and so I'm excited about that. And then right away, one of the coaches told me, like, no, that's not his deal at all. That was never his intention. He's kind of moved on to this other thing, and if he was going to take advantage of this role, it wouldn't likely be us. And then so I'm like, oh, okay, well, just cool that a UNC guy is kind of shaking up the NCAA right now, because if it is the right thing for those players to get the fifth year, I'm proud that a UNC guy was able to affect that. If it turns out to be not the right thing for those who are looking at it more closely, and I will learn more about it in the next few days too, and what's right and what's wrong, and all the unintended consequences of maybe changing the rule, then maybe my opinion will change. But right now, it's just kind of exciting to be watching it all.
Oh yeah,
and a little frustrating not to be able to potentially move on making the roster better.
Do you think it's going to be one of those things where they're like, "Hey, we can't really fight this because it is what it is. We can put our laws in. Like, if you signed a professional contract, you can't play, you can't enter the transfer portal, all that stuff. But hey, we can't really fight the players.
Yeah.
But we could say, if you play one of these dudes, we're going to punish you as a team." Do you see the NCAA coming, doing something as crazy as that?
The threat is there already. Wow. Yeah, because I mean, theoretically, we could act according to the judicial branch,
and
right?
We're seeing that, yeah.
Like, but the NCAA is—they have their legal experts too. So it's really strange for somebody like me, and maybe you too, where like, I'm not a legal expert, and so if I'm talking to a judge about something, and this judge says, Wisney and these other people in this situation should have a fifth year, then I'm like, oh, okay, that's the law. And then the NCAA is coming in and saying, the court is wrong.
Yeah,
the court misapplied.
Oh, yeah,
you know, and it's just crazy for a coach because I don't have the time, the knowledge, the expertise to really dive into this, other than to monitor it as I should be, which is, how does it relate to my team this hour, this day, this afternoon? And it changes so fast.
We had an insider for the Wyoming Cowboys on the show talking, and there's like two or three players in question there, and they're like, what do we do? So you're not the only, every team is, there's so many teams that are dealing with this. Maybe it's only one or two guys, but it's still like, these are important guys, and if we could have them, it feels kind of like a bonus. So we want to try to bring this dude in. But at the same time, if we do, are we going to be punished if he steps foot onto an actual football field?
And the team dynamic at this point, and now that training camp is advancing rapidly, you know, day after day, that's another kind of, if we're like building a house, so to speak, with training camp and getting this product ready to put on the field on day one, like, all of these practices are important. The things that are going on, the things that we're learning, the technique mastery that guys are getting better at, the work that they're putting in. And so as a team member, you know, if a guy joins you on day two or day four or day five of camp, that guy's got a chance to really put in some work and kind of build his way back to the full measure of effort that everybody is putting in. But if we're adding somebody 3 weeks into a 4 week training camp and then saying, yeah, it's a full fledged member of our team, it wasn't his fault, not every player on the team is going to feel the same way about that.
Like,
wait a minute now. I put in 12-hour days for 3 weeks while this guy was, you know, at the lake. It's just really strange right now. Other sports don't have this, like our softball coach I know is kind of looking at some by the way, other sports have a lot more players than football. Mm-hmm. It's rare in football to come in and play as a true freshman. More than the four games that would allow for a red shirt.
Sure.
It's also rare to stay uninjured and not miss a season of competition. And so when you stack those two things together, there are very few football players compared to, like, I was talking with our administration about our softball team, where it's quite common to come in and play your 4 years and graduate and stay on track. But they don't start their season until January. Mm-hmm. So we have the sport where it's, you know, where it, the timeline is the most critical. We're already rolling, and we're just weeks away from game one.
Yeah, for football especially.
Yeah,
it's insane. And then we've got all the other stuff going on with the Protect College Sports Act. I've never asked you this, Coach, and feel free to no comment me on this one. But I was just watching a Nick Saban thing where he's like, "We need Congress to pass this."
Yeah.
I've seen so many 50-50. I've seen so many people that say, "Yes, I want Congress involved in the NCAA." Others are like, no, everything, you know, Congress getting involved, government getting involved is going to screw it up. Do you think it's a good idea to have Congress involved in the NCAA?
It seems necessary to me right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there must be, in my opinion, there must be either the only way that we're going to get some guardrails in place that I think are important for the educational piece of sports. And to me, anyway, that's still why college sports exist. It is co-curricular. There are things that I learned as a football player that shaped me as a person, as a man, my values as much or more than the degree that I earned in English from BYU, right?
Like, yeah.
I think I call upon my football experiences much more than I do any one thing that I may have learned in any one class, right? So to have players kind of running from their problems, which we've seen now, you know, to climb the depth chart, they're bouncing. There should be some rights to do that, but I also think we are retarding the growth potentially of some of these players. As I look back at my football experience in college, it wasn't the sacks or the honors or the player of the week or something like that that made me the man I am. It's the frustration of not being where I wanted to be on the depth chart. It was the losses. It was the times when I got knocked down and had to build myself back up. And I think we're losing some of that, especially in the sport of football, because it's such a difficult sport to play early in your career because it's such a physical sport.
Yeah.
And my point is, the only way it appears that the NCAA can start to put some guardrails on some of this transferring and eligibility, like if every player can just play as long as they want, what is that doing to the next group of high school kids? They're missing out on opportunities, and it's already happening, right?
Right. Yeah, great.
And
point.
So when I look at those guardrails that I would like to see start to exist, the only two paths that I see are the NCAA needs to make football players or football, men's football and men's basketball players, maybe all student athletes, employees. And at that point, they could, you know, the universities could sign the same type of contracts that you and I sign, where we give up some rights in exchange for, you know, some salary, some
sure,
benefits.
Yeah.
And then the other would be kind of a protected class or a separate class of pseudo employee, and the legislature could potentially create that. And then that would allow the NCAA to put some guardrails in place. But right now, all the guardrails the NCAA tries to put up, the courts undo them.
Yeah, and this is why, again, the NCAA, going back to it, they're fighting so hard on this one because they're like, man, we need a victory.
I think so. They're getting competitive.
This one seems to be the most obvious one, not to me anyway, to not fight, really, because it's just like 1 year. Just make it so those guys can go, and then we're done and move forward. And this is, again, my opinion. This is where I think the NCAA is just so terribly misguided. They're gonna focus on this one more than anything I've really seen them push back on. And to me, it's the most obvious. Just go back 1 year and say that class is good because it takes you far enough back where if a player's on a roster, yeah, that would make sense that they might have a fifth year.
Yeah, well, you know, the old joke is like, you know, the NCAA was so mad at LSU that they put Wichita State on the death penalty or something like that. And I think that's the case. It was like the NCAA yes. was so frustrated by Vanderbilt that they're really going after UNC now to prove a point.
100%. You know? Yes. Well, and I get so damn mad too when I think of this, and I know it doesn't necessarily relate, kind of, I guess, but you're like the Eric Gibson story for you guys.
Yeah.
Like, and you bring up LSU, and I'm like, that is an obvious. The dude was kind of pulled the bait and switch on him. They tell him they've got a spot for him. They don't have a spot for him. It still counts as a year of eligibility. LSU's fine. They don't have to suffer any consequences. This quarterback, good young man, good player for you, is screwed.
Yep.
He loses a year of eligibility. And yet the NCAA just, and again, nationally, I don't think a lot of people paid attention to that story because there's a lot of these stories that happen. And that one is another no-brainer.
Yep.
And this is why I have no... And this isn't you saying this on your podcast, but I have no sympathy for the NCAA sometimes when they lose cases like this.
We could have chosen to get viral, to go viral. We legitimately had an email from the LSU AD saying, we messed up. We screwed this kid up. Please make this right for the kid.
Yeah.
And the NCAA said no. And the number of people that would love to see that email, but I didn't feel like that was the right thing to do, right? The athletic director at a major focal point university, a blue blood university, was willing to kind of put their trust in us and admit fault under their watch. And I just didn't see the point because we can't legislate it through social media, but we could have, that would have been something that millions of people would have loved to have read and then pontificate on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an amazing story, and not in a positive way, but it really is.
Yeah.
And that's where, again, it's just like, this is the thing you're focusing on. We got a quarterback that just gets absolutely annihilated.
Yeah.
His career. And I know he's playing like D2 or something like that, mm-hmm. coach. He's still
right.
playing.
Yeah.
But he had an opportunity. And again, for you guys, and you never said this, but it screws you over too, because you're like, that guy's the plan. Yeah. We have a backup quarterback and Peter Castelli that we're like, hey, Peter, Eric's going to be the guy,
right?
You know, and then Peter goes, well, then I want to go somewhere else and compete right. for a starting job. Okay, good. Good to know you, man. Great yeah. relationship. We'll see you later. We wish you the best of luck. He's gone. And then you hear this about Eric and it's like, well, now quarterback one and two are gone. So we're starting all over again here. And I know we're excited yep. about this current group of quarterbacks.
Right. Things tend to work out.
It just really, at the time, screwed you over and screwed Eric Gibson over. And
that's
Peter
right.
Castelli.
That's right. Yeah. And I talk about just kind of being a yo-yo or a flag in the wind. I think a lot of times that's just what being a head coach is. You know, when I was working for Jim Harbaugh, his brother John was trying to get his first head coaching job, and then Dad Jack was kind of helping the boys out. And we had this, you know, the whole staff shared it. It was the book, How to Be a Head Coach. You know, it took through everything from academics to strength and conditioning to in-game decisions, and it was awesome because Jack was so experienced, and you know, Jim and John had great careers getting started. And anyway, I took that book to my head coaching interviews. I carried it with me on the first day at Southern Utah in my first head coaching job, and it was like I very quickly learned that being a head coach is just like what is coming at you that day.
Yeah,
who's trying to contact you? Who's in trouble? Who needs help? Which administrators have a conversation that they need to have with you, and what kind of opportunities are out there today. And it's not some kind of, you know, I think whatever businesses where you can say, hey, here's my first 100-day outline. You know, I don't know if that's just an interview technique or that works in other businesses, but in football, at least the way I've learned to do it, it's not very applicable. Your plan has nothing to do with the actual adjustments that need to be made every day.
Wow.
So these are good well examples said. Of that.
Yeah. No, and it's crazy. And I appreciate you going there with me too. And I know, you know, as these podcasts progress here in this month, we'll do more of a football Weber State kind of preview and
it's
all
coming.
That stuff. But
yeah.
I couldn't help it. We had to get into some of this stuff because coach, it's relevant, and you open up so much with us, and you give us insight that we couldn't get anywhere else. So I have to gobble it up, my friend.
Well, you sounds like you're, you know, justifying it. I trust you to take us in the direction that people would want to listen. If anybody knows me like more socially, when I'm not playing head football coach, when I'm not doing head football coach role, my first assumption is nobody wants to hear what I have to say. So I'm known as pretty reserved and quiet. So if you're asking questions, you're the expert. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not the expert, but I am asking questions. I'll tell you that. Coach, appreciate you going there with me. I know we got some plans coming up, too. For sure going to be out there at Nottingham Field August 28th. We'll be setting up shop all day. Going to be out there just talking football and previewing this. It's going to be fantastic. And then I know here in a couple of weeks, we're setting up shop, too, to kind of get to know some of these players a little bit more, too. Maybe some coaches as well. But love working with the Bears. And excited to follow along in this very special season.
Sounds like a great plan for a countdown to the season. I'm excited about that too.
All right, my friend. We'll catch up with you next week.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.